Myth number 9. There is a right way and a wrong way to make your relationship great. Nothing could be further from the truth. There is not some etched-in-stone right way to be in a relationship. There is not a right way to show support or affection. There is not a right way to raise children, relate to your in-laws, handle disputes, or any other challenges involved in a complex relationship. What is important is that you find ways of being together that work for you. Whether or not what you're doing meets some standard that you find in a book or conforms to what your mother or father think you ought to be doing should not become some standard you use in measuring your relationship. The litmus test for you should be whether or not what you and your partner are doing is generating the results that you want. It's not important that you follow particular principles. It's important that the two of you are comfortable with the principles that work, and then you write your own rules. Red alert. In addition to avoiding rigidity about your own thoughts, feelings, or behaviors, it is important that you not be rigid and judgmental about your partner's thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. There is, for example, not a right way or wrong way for your partner to love you. If he or she shows love in a way that is different from the way you think it should be displayed, that does not mean that you are right and your partner is wrong. More importantly, it does not mean that the quality of what your partner is giving you is less than it would be if he or she were thinking, feeling, or behaving in the way that you have arbitrarily decided is right. Don't get hung up on trying to conform to some made-up set of behaviors concocted by people who have never even met you or your partner, or who at best see you for an hour a week. Focus on what works. Let's say your partner expressed genuine love to you in a foreign language that you could not understand. Conclusion? You could think that your partner had no love and commitment for you. The frustration for your partner in this situation, however, is that this might be the only language he or she speaks. So he or she did not choose a mode of expression that is precisely that which you or some therapist has decided is correct. Does that fact make your partner's feelings for you of any lesser quality or value? I have always been a cat lover, and I remember early in my relationship with my wife, Robin, I sent her a cat card. There was a drawing on the front of the card showing two cats from behind sitting on a fence. One was kind of a masculine-looking, scroungy alley cat, and the other was drawn as a fluffy, pretty female cat. Their tails were slightly intertwined, and they were looking at the moon. When you opened the card, it simply read, "If I had two dead rats, I'd give you one." She was probably a little perplexed. I, on the other hand, was intending to send a very clear message. Despite its humor, the card really expressed my genuine feelings. Yes, lots of us could work much harder at expressing our love and devotion to our partners, but lots of us could work equally hard at learning our partner's foreign language. If we learn our partner's language, instead of demanding that they adopt our language, we may find that we have far more of what we want than we think we do. It would be tragic for you to miss quality offerings of love and devotion from your partner because you fail to recognize the value of a really good dead rat. Resist being rigid in your own modes of relating, and resist being judgmental about your partner's modes of relating. Do what works. Myth number 10. Your relationship can only become great when you get your partner straightened out. Many of you still have this childlike notion that you don't have to take too much responsibility for finding your own happiness. You still believe the fairy tale that falling in love means finding someone who is going to make you live happily ever after. And when the fairy tale turns out to be untrue, you want to point the finger, to blame, to believe that all the unpleasant things you are experiencing in your relationship are being caused by your partner. Your unhappiness, you believe, is a result of your partner's deeds. Your life would be so much better, you say to yourself, if your partner would just change. As a result, you conclude, there's little you can do until your partner shapes up his or her act. When I have counseled with people in distressed relationships, I have asked them who, if they had the choice, they would most like to influence. Their answer is invariably that they would most like to influence their mates. You're probably no different. You assume that if you could just modify your partner's thinking, feeling, and behavior, your relationship would be so much better. That's a myth. The most important person for you to influence is you. You are the most important person in this relationship, and you must be the focus of your beginning efforts to change this relationship. You must rediscover your own dignity and self-esteem, your own personal power. You cannot reconnect with your partner if you are not reconnectable. Understand that I am not saying you are to blame for the problems that may exist in your relationship. But I am saying that you are, at the very least, jointly accountable for the current state of your relationship. If your relationship is not everything that you want it to be, then it's your thinking, your attitudes, and your emotions that need challenging. You have chosen the thoughts, feelings, and behaviors that are creating the pain in this relationship. You have chosen your thoughts, feelings, and behaviors just as surely as you choose the clothes you wear each day, the car you drive, and the place where you work. You have chosen these thoughts, feelings, and behaviors because at some level they work for you. At some level, these characteristics or interactive patterns have provided you with a payoff that has reinforced the recurrence of these behaviors. If you find the payoffs, you have found the lifeline that keeps the destructive behaviors alive and recurring. Once you identify the payoffs, you can shut them off and remove them from your life. Once the behavior no longer works for you, once it fails to generate you some payoff, it will cease to occur.